Hello and welcome to this extra inning of The Ballpark, a podcast from the Phelan US Centre here at the London School of Economics. I'm Chris Gilson, Managing Editor of the Phelan US Centre's blog on US politics and policy, USAP. In March 2024, I spoke to Professor Jason Casellas, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Houston and the John G. Winant Visiting Professor for American Government at Oxford University for 2023-24. His work specializes in American politics, with specific research and teaching interests in Latino politics, legislative politics, and state and local politics. We spoke about the changing role of Latino voters in U.S. politics and what the political future may hold for this group. If you could just give us a quick overview of your kind of current research and kind of what your background is. Thank you.
Yes. I'm a specialist in American government, and my research is largely focused on the role of Latinos in U.S. politics, especially that of representation in governmental institutions, especially in legislatures and Congress. I've done some work also regarding Latino representation in the judiciary, in the federal judiciary. My current work is looking at the election of Latino Republicans to state legislatures and Congress, and in particular, the extent to which the growing numbers of Latino Republicans running for office, who are they and where are they coming from and what kinds of issues they're running on. And so that's a short book that'll be released later this year.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. So your past work explores the role and evolution of Latino voters in the United States. Could you briefly talk a bit about why exploring the Latino community and their attitudes towards politics and voting behaviors is particularly useful for understanding wider American politics and policy?
Great question. I think, Latinos are the fastest growing or one of the fastest growing groups in the United States. So currently it's about 18% of the U.S. population is Latino, and it's growing and growing. So with a group that is so populous, and if you look at states like Texas and California, I mean, we're talking almost 45% of the population in those states. And these are the biggest states in terms of population. So when we look at Latino politics, we really can't understand American politics without understanding Latino politics and what's going on with this large growing group. And so one of the things that I think is important when we're looking at Latinos is to understand, first of all, that it's not a monolithic group. Even though we talk about Latinos in this monolithic way, right, it's still important to step back and say, you have Latinos who have lived in the United States all their lives and they go back generations in the United States. So they're not immigrants, right? Then you also have those who are immigrants who have just arrived. And you have those who've come from different parts of Latin America with different political experiences. And so that's why there's a lot of kind of nuance and a lot of differences that we should examine when we're talking about the Latino vote, because a Venezuelan immigrant comes with a different set of experiences than someone from Mexico or someone from El Salvador or someone from Argentina. And likewise, we have with Latinos also that come in various colors and shades, right? And so experience with discrimination, is very different for a Dominican immigrant than an Argentinian immigrant, because, they look very different, right? And so their experiences are going to be very different. And so when we look at these groups, I think it's important to understand those nuances. And now, having said that, what we are seeing kind of nationally and in the case in a lot of states is that there is this sort of shifting allegiances, I call them, of Latinos who are not as strongly Democratic. So let me back up here and say, traditionally Latinos have voted for Democrats at about 2/3 to 1/3. And that's pretty much the benchmark, right? In George W. Bush in 2000 won 40% of the Latino votes. They did a little bit better than normal. And so you have these situations in which there is a little bit of ebb and flow, right? Mitt Romney did little bit poorly, like 27% of the Latino vote. But what we've seen then is that 2/3 to 1/3. And now what we're seeing, I think, is more and more Latinos voting for Republicans. And in certain states, it's getting to the point where, you're getting up in the 40s, 45%. Texas is one example. And in the 2020 election, a lot of those South Texas rural counties, we saw some significant movement toward towards Trump, especially in the rural areas, right? Less so in the urban areas. So when I talk about the Latino vote being, you know, not monolithic, it's not even monolithic when you look at within one state and in between Mexican Americans in the same state, because you have rural Mexican Americans and urban Mexican Americans. And in Texas, that makes a huge difference. Of course, in the suburban and urban areas, they're a much larger percentage. And so there's not as much movement there towards Republicans as there is in those rural areas. And I think one of the things that we're seeing in American politics in general, and I think this is reflected in what's happening in Texas, is rural areas have become much more Republican, right? Much more so than urban areas that certainly become and have always been very Democratic. But the rural areas have become extremely Republican in recent elections. We're talking 90%. And in places like Texas, that includes a lot of Latino rural people, right, who are identifying, I think, as rural. They certainly still identify as Latino as well, but they identify as rural. And that rural identity, I think, is really making a big difference in the way they see politics.
So one of the surprising outcomes of the 2020 presidential election was the relative weakness of Joe Biden's results in many majority Latino districts compared to previous Democratic candidates, particularly in the Southwest, as you mentioned. Can you talk about the reasons behind the shift? And do you expect, or does the data suggest, that we might see this again in this election year, or is it something more specific to 2020?
The evidence that I've seen suggests that it's part of a trend, and it wasn't 2020 specific. There are some scholars who've come out with a paper that look at this, look at the 2020 race, and show, of course, these changes. And these changes that happen not just in Texas and South Florida, which they certainly happen there, but they looked at precincts all over the country, and you see that there is this movement towards Republicans among Latinos, and it's not isolated to certain parts of the country like Texas or Florida. I think one of the things that they found, and one of the things that I think is interesting, is that in looking at the 2022 midterm elections, this movement towards Republicans did not stall out. Now, it's important to keep in mind that that turnout was a little lower because it's a midterm year. So we'll have to look at the data for this coming year's elections to see if there is a continual movement or whether the midterm elections were just a fluke. But it appears to be that there is this trend, right, towards Republicans, and it's not a one-off event. Some people thought it was COVID, and that Democrats were seen as the party of lockdowns, and that a lot of working class Latinos, especially in places like Texas and Florida, more so Texas, were working in a lot of sort of service industries, and it really hurt them economically, shutdowns, and they wanted to support Trump because he was not seen as a shutdown candidate. While that may have been part of the equation, it didn't appear to be a one-off event. And then also the issue of, when you look at Texas, there was the issue as well of in the 2020 election, right? Not just the lockdowns, right? But you also had the issues dealing with how to respond to COVID, right? And so it wasn't just about the lockdowns. I think it was about other issues as well. But I think it's part of this larger phenomenon I talked about earlier with the working class, right? And Latinos seeing themselves as working class, or most Latinos being working class, not having college degrees, right? And that's where you see the most movement towards the Republicans in the working class, non-college educated vote. And because Latinos are disproportionately young, or less likely to be college educated, then I think that's why you're seeing this trend, right? And it's especially pronounced with young men as well, Latino men. So there is a gender gap as well, which is part of a larger issue, right? That there is also a gender gap, meaning that women are more likely to support Democrats than men.
Thank you. So in as much as we are able to talk about Latino voters as a group, in what ways are the political interests and objectives of Latino voters in the U.S. different from the country as a whole?
Right. I mean, that's a good question. I think Latinos want what most Americans want, right? They want a good economy. They want unemployment to be low. They want access to health care, good education, and so on. And there is, I think, a misconception that Latinos, all they care about is immigration, right? And that they care about it in a way that supports a liberal immigration policy. And while that may be true to some extent, there are many Latinos who support restrictive immigration and support Trump and other Republicans, not despite their views on immigration, but because of their views on immigration. And nevertheless, though, I think most Latinos don't rank immigration as a top issue in general, right? Perhaps if it's on the agenda and people are talking about it at the national level, they're going to say it's important simply because that's what they're hearing about. And that's often the case with any kind of question that asks the most important policy issue to you. People are just responding to what they're listening to on the news and on the radio and social media. But Latinos tend to, I think, be like most Americans. And again, getting back to what I said earlier, sort of a younger working class, less likely to have college degree, inflation, right? Job availability, a good economy, good schools, crime, right? This is another issue that that's the one I forgot about earlier when I was talking about lockdowns. There was a sense in which there was a short time there when there was a discussion among some Democrats, certainly not the mainstream, about defunding the police, right? And I think that was very harmful to a lot of Democrats, especially in these Latino districts who, you know, were not fond of such a policy. Because, you know, crime is something that disproportionately affects lower income communities and communities of where many Latinos live. And that was not helpful, I think, for a lot of that rhetoric in some of these races, that Democrats were seen as a party of defunding the police. And that certainly wasn't the case in terms of national Democrats trying to, or even Biden saying that he was not for that, right? But I think when we talk about these working class voters, I think these issues span ethnicities and races, right? They care about these same issues. And I think that would be true with Latinos, African Americans, and whites, right? And so I want to emphasize, right, that, I mean, to the extent that there are any quote unquote Latino issues, you know, I would say that these are issues that do and should resonate just with other people in general.
Thank you. So I want to touch a bit more on the sort of discourse over immigration in the U.S. In recent weeks and months, we've seen a big debate in Congress about border reform, immigration policy reform, so much that it's touching on other issues like funding for Ukraine, for example. I'm interested to know your thoughts on negative energy and emotion Republicans, especially Donald Trump, are putting into this debate. Trump has described immigrants as in the worst of terms. And I'm interested to know, you talked earlier about how a lot of Latinos may be not necessarily pro-immigration or support some of these more restrictive immigration policies. How do we square that?
Yeah, that's a good question. Like I said before, not all Latinos come from an immigrant background. If they do come from an immigrant background, many will often say that they came legally and they came through a normal process, and that, you know, the border should be, you know, controlled or should be secure, and that they support these kind of efforts to do so. And, you know, even I think President Biden has said, right, that he wants to secure the border as well, and that he's also willing to work with Republicans and Democrats to come up with a solution. But I think it is correct that immigration is more used as a political football, right, rather than as a policy issue that that there's sort of a willingness to solve, right? So I think it is the case that most Americans would see the border as porous, right? And that there needs to be some kind of a solution. The problem is, as many say, right, is that the political issue is what's being used here, that Republicans are using the issue to show that Democrats and the Biden administration is failing, right, in their responsibility to secure the border. And they're trying to use that as a political issue in order to get votes. Just that say, vote for us, we're going to secure the border, right? And so it's politics, right? And then, you know, of course, Democrats also have to be careful because on the one hand, they do want to secure the border. On the other hand, they also don't want to alienate any of their base, any of their voters who are more supportive of less restrictive immigration policies, right? And sort of a more humane immigration policy. So it's a fine line. I think that both of these candidates and both parties have to walk. But we have not had sort of significant immigration reform in the United States. I mean, really, since 1986. So it's been quite a long time. And it's one of those issues that you talk to anyone and they all agree, yes, we need reform. But like with most policies, the devil's in the details, right? And if you have on the one hand, Republicans saying we will not deal with regularizing the process or expanding legal immigration or work permits or anything like that unless the border is secure, right? And so at what point does that happen, right? At what point is the border officially secure? And that becomes sort of a political football, because it's a sense in which one side wants pure enforcement and the other side wants, sort of more regularization of people who are here illegally and maybe a path to citizenship. And so both of these things need to happen, right? But when you have a political environment in which compromise is seen as caving and is seen as sort of a betrayal of your principles, right, then you're not going to have any action. And that's why the state level is where all the action is. And so you look at a place like Texas passing laws, right, trying to deal with immigration. And of course, federal courts coming in saying, well, wait a minute, you can't do that. You can't arrest illegal immigrants and jail them, right? That's a federal responsibility. And so that's what we're seeing play out right now in the courts, in the federal courts. The federal courts trying to rule on what states are doing. And again, it's all part of this patchwork of laws that are happening. And you especially see it in Texas, right, which has the longest border, right, of all the states with Mexico, and a governor who's trying to make the case that the Biden administration is not securing the border and that he's doing it because of the lack of action from the Biden administration, which is why I think, you know, Abbott would probably be a potential vice presidential pick for Trump, especially if he wants to reinforce this issue.
You mentioned Texas, and I think Texas is a really interesting state, especially from here in the UK. It's one of the biggest states in the US. It's culturally perceived to be quite different to the UK and Europe. Do you see Texas's Latino politics as being very specific to Texas, or do they show what the US might look more like in the coming decades?
That's a great question. And you have in Texas a longstanding Latino population that's been there for generations, but you also have in the cities, especially, a lot of newer immigrants. So it is a mix, right? But you do have in Texas, unlike in most other places, a really large rural Latino population. And I think that's where you see some uniqueness, because there's not a lot of other places where you have so many rural Latinos. Other parts, maybe in Arizona, New Mexico, parts of California, but for the most part, it's something that you really see in Texas. Yes, Texas is unique. You know, it's a state that sort of has its own cultural and political traditions. And, you know, Latinos there have generally supported Democrats in the past, but not to the same extent as Latinos in other states. Right. So when I mentioned earlier, it was like 30% voting for Republicans. In Texas, it's always been a little higher. Right. And especially in what we've seen, and this is part of the research that I've been doing, is that just in the past several years, you've seen a real growth of women, of Latino Republican women running and winning at the state legislative level and also at the congressional level. So like Myra Flores became the first, she's a Mexican-born immigrant who ran and won a special election seat. And she then lost, you know, in the general election in 22, but she's going to run again in the same seat. So we'll have to see how that race unfolds. But also they elected another woman in another district, Monica de la Cruz from Brownsville. Again, Brownsville is on the border with Mexico, Matamoros. And so this is a very traditionally Democratic area that elected a Republican congresswoman, Latina. Now, part of it is the district was created by the Republican legislature to try to elect Republicans. So that's certainly part of it. But I think what happened in the past is that this area was so strongly Democratic that Republicans never ran any candidates there. And now they're beginning to run more candidates. And so when you run candidates, you're going to win some, right? And so I think Republicans are sort of waking up, hey, we have this opportunity here to win. So let's sort of invest a little bit here. But at the same time, I think Democrats have to be careful because they haven't been investing in Texas. And part of it is because Texas is not a swing state. So why invest in sort of a state that you're not going to win at the presidential level when you need to deal with a lot of these Midwestern states that you need to win, right? And so, and Republicans, however, have sort of, because they so dominate Texas politics, they've been able to divert some of their resources to try to maintain and grow their support among the Latino population there. And they have sort of had some payoff there. And that's why the state has not really gone blue, meaning that has gone Democratic in ways that a lot of pundits 20 years ago predicted, right? Because they assumed that Latino growth would mean automatic Democratic support, right? And that's not the case. It's not necessarily the case, you know. Politics is not static, right? It's dynamic, and parties will adapt and be sort of more dynamic when it comes to appealing to voters. And so that's why I think Texas is a kind of good microcosm, right, of the country, because it's a state that is majority-minority now. So if you look at the combination of African-American, Latino, and Asian, it's majority-minority, yet Republicans dominate it. And so a lot of it has to do with, you know, lower turnout among Latinos. Yes, that's true. But even Latinos, when you get 40% of the Latino vote, which is what Republicans are getting there, and most of the white vote, they're going to win elections for the foreseeable future, unless Democrats come in and change their way of attracting a larger swath of the population.
Thank you. Moving back to the country more generally, are Latino votes politically powerful in general, or have factors such as redistricting and disenfranchisement reduced the ability of Latino voters to have their views taken as seriously at the national and state levels compared to, say, white working class voters?
Right. I mean, I think traditionally Latinos have been in states that, like Texas or California, in which the outcome is kind of determined, right? So there's been little outreach to Latinos by Democrats in California or even by Republicans in Texas, because it was sort of very clear who was going to win those states, right? And that's where most Latinos are, in Texas, California, Florida, right, as well, and maybe New York. But all these states have become dominant by one party. Florida is no longer a swing state. I don't think it's going to be really contested this year. It used to be a swing state, but it's no longer, right? And so because Latinos in general are concentrated in these states, I think there's been a sort of a lack of attention, right? Now, there are some swing states that we may see the Latino vote matter, right? And so Arizona and Nevada, I think, are the two states to watch in 2024, because Biden won Arizona by a very small margin last time. And same thing with Nevada. And the polling there, with both states, Latinos are about 30 to 35% of the population. So if you have 10,000 votes separating the candidates, as we saw in Arizona, any kind of outreach by either party there could make a difference, right? So that's when we're talking about the presidential races. But I think in the past, it has been the case. And, you know, I remember in 2000, there was an edited volume that we worked on, and we called it Muted Voices, because Latinos were kind of in many ways taken for granted. They weren't really seen as consequential. And it's sort of the idea that there was this appeal during election times and then disappearance for 2 years or 4 years, and then back again to ask for votes and not really providing any kind of representation in the meantime. And I think part of it was Latinos are really underrepresented in Congress and at the state legislative levels, in proportion to their population, right? African Americans are much better represented in proportion to their population. And the reason for that, as I mentioned earlier, there's a high proportion of non-citizen Latinos, and voter turnout among Latinos is lower. We said, well, why is it lower? It's lower because, remember, Latinos are younger, lower levels of income, and lower levels of formal education. And those are the groups that generally have lower turnout, right? And so because Latinos are in that category, they're going to have lower turnout. But I think in the future, it's going to be better because you see, well, Latinos will get older, like as a percentage, that's what happens. When I first started teaching 20 years ago or so, Latinos had the highest high school dropout rate. I remember lecturing on this all the time, that it was really high high school dropout rate. And if you look at since the late 1990s, 2000, the dropout rate has plummeted. So it's been one of these real success stories, really, which I don't think a lot of people pay attention to or talk about. But I think it bodes well for the Latino community because you have such a low high school dropout rate now, more college attendance, right, and more college degrees. And that, we know the evidence suggests that a person with a college degree is more likely to have higher income, right, and throughout their lifetime. And those with higher incomes, right, are going to sort of have better outcomes and more likely to vote, right? Once you have home ownership, you're more likely to be a voter. So I think the future looks good for Latinos in general because, you know, they're getting older, they're getting higher incomes, and they're also getting more educated. And that's going to lead, I think, inevitably to higher turnout and higher rates of voting.
Thank you so much. This is my final question, really, before we finish. I'd just like to give you the opportunity to talk about anything you're working on, any upcoming projects or books you'd like, you think our audience would like to know about.
Yeah, so I alluded earlier to the book I'm working on, the election of Latino Republicans to state legislatures. And I just want to kind of give some highlights of some of the things I'm finding, which I think are really interesting. The first thing is that there's been a growth since 2018 of women, of Latino Republicans running. And so this is something that we didn't expect to find, that there are a lot more women running, and they're more likely to win as well than the men in terms of running in areas that are majority white districts. And so you're seeing this sort of mainstreaming, I think is what I call it, of Latino Republicans running in districts from states that have very, very minute Latino populations. And so that's an interesting phenomenon that I think reflects, right, this sort of ability of Latinos to sort of, you know, become, I think, like the Irish or Italians in so many ways and sort of get into the mainstream of American political life. And I think that's a good thing. On the other hand, we also see that many of these Latino Republicans are quite conservative, right? And I think one of the reasons for that is that they have to sort of prove their conservative credentials, I think, to a lot of voters, because there is, I think, a suspicion that they may not be conservative based on their profile, that maybe especially white voters would look at them and say, well, are they really conservative? Because if they're Hispanic or Latino, they may not be. And so I think we're finding some interesting results there that if you look at their voting scores, things like that, they're quite conservative. And then also, I think one of the other things that we're finding, I think that's really fascinating, is it used to be, right, that when we talked about Latino Republicans in Congress or in state legislatures, these were just Cubans from Florida, right? And what we found is that in terms of state legislator candidates, most candidates are actually Mexican origin. Most Republican candidates running since 2018 are Mexican origin, not Cuban. Yes, Cubans do quite well in terms they're more likely to win the elections, right? But in terms of who's running, it's actually more Mexican origin running. So I think that's kind of a change. And it suggests, right, that the Republicans are making inroads, I think, with Mexican American, which are 2/3 of the Latino population in the U.S. are Mexican origin. And so I think that, and also we found that there's sort of Latino Republicans of all national origin groups running, Argentinian. And so we went in and coded to look at which, is it isolated to one group, Cubans, right? Or is it just much more spread out than that? And indeed it is. And so, I think the lesson, right, is that I think it's a good thing for the Latino community that both parties are competing. And that's something I think this data that we're analyzing shows, right, that Latinos are starting to run for state legislative seats in not just very Latino areas, but in all areas, right? And their rate of success has been increasing significantly in the past several cycles. And so we're going to sort of say a little bit more about some of the hypotheses we're testing and some of the reasons for this kind of growth and how many of these legislators see themselves once they're in office.
Thank you so much. And when can our audience expect your book to be out?
Well, we should have it hopefully by the election. That's my deadline.
Fantastic.
We'll have it to reviewers probably in the next month or so.
And what title should they look out for?
Well, it's going to be called Shifting Allegiances, The Election of Latino Republicans to State Legislatures and Congress. The argument is that these allegiances are shifting, right? They're not as sort of Republicans, I think, want to overplay the fact that they're making inroads, and I think Democrats kind of want to not give too much attention to it. But I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, that there are these shifting allegiances that we should pay attention to. It's not a radical shift by any means, but as I told you earlier, just in terms of the Latino vote, that there is this sort of ticking towards the Republicans in ways that I think we should pay more attention to.
Fantastic. Something you should definitely look out for, the new book. Well, Professor Jason Casales, thank you so much for speaking to the Ballpark today.
My pleasure.
Professor Jason Casales is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Houston and the John G. Winant Visiting Professor for American Government at Oxford University for 2023-24. If you'd like to hear more from Professor Jason Casales, I also spoke to him about the Super Tuesday results. You can find the episode of The Ballpark in this feed. And that's it for this extra inning of The Ballpark. Thanks so much to Professor Jason Casales for joining us in this episode. For more information about the Phelan U.S. Center, you can go to www.lse.ac.uk/united-states. On Twitter and Instagram, we're at @LSE_US, and on Facebook, we're LSE United States. This extra inning was produced by Chris Gilson and Anderson Tan. Our theme tune is by Ranger and the Rearrangers, a Seattle-based gypsy jazz band. You can look them up at rangerswings.com. To listen to all our previous episodes, just enter LSE Ballpark into your search engine of choice. You'll find us. We're free to listen to, and unlike lots of other podcasts, we're ad-free. We'd love to hear what you think about the show. Email us any feedback at uscenter@lse.ac.uk, or you can send us a tweet at @LSE_US. And tell your friends about us. If you'd like what you've heard, then please rate and review us via your podcast platform. It really helps other people to find the show. The content and opinions expressed in this podcast do not reflect those of the Phelan U.S. Center or of the London School of Economics. Thanks for listening.